Welcome back to another episode of Mass Monologues. I am thrilled to have Ben Stimson here with me. Can you please introduce yourself? Tell us about what you do.
Of course. So, thank you for having me on. This is a real pleasure.
My pleasure.
I wear many hats. Succinctly, I am a therapist over in Ontario here. I'm also an author in the metaphysical pagan sphere. My recent educational background has been in history, folklore, medieval studies, and classical studies. And I'm like in between here and there. I've done quite a lot in my life, but those are the two, three big major things right now. So I author, therapist, and folklorist.
Okay. So I want to hear a bit about your book, as knowing that you're an author. What is it based on? Tell me a little bit about why you wrote it.
Of course, definitely. I originally started writing my first book. I've actually just written and handed in the manuscript for a second one. But my first book came out in September of last year. And I started writing it originally in 2021, very early 2021, during one of the pandemic lockdowns here in Canada. And so the book's title is Ancestral Whispers, A Guide to Developing Ancestral Veneration Practices. It's a metaphysical spirituality book. It's teaching people how to bring in a spiritual practice of working with one's ancestors in a way that is going to bridge the therapy piece, but also bridge the spirituality piece and put people back into relationship with themselves and those who came before. The whole book is really an overview of worldview, of how to think about the ancestors, particularly from a Western kind of mindset. I've been very blessed with involvement in various spiritual practices over the years, African traditional religion, a European-based religion, and of course, my own background. You can tell I'm not from Canada originally. I'm from the United Kingdom, bringing that Western and Eastern kind of perspective. So I wanted to put something together that would allow people within the niche that I'm writing in to start to explore their ancestry in a way that was not related to trauma. Because so often, particularly in the communities I'm writing towards, ancestral trauma is a big thing.
Yes.
And it gets in the way. I think it gets in the way. And I say that trying not to be dismissive of it, because it is a huge part of many people's life and experience. But that in relating to ancestors and learning how to relate to ancestors, in an ownership form, taking and building relationship through spiritual practice, I've noticed, and I've certainly learned myself, that trauma piece can be mitigated. So I sat down 2021, started putting this book together. I'd previously just finished my psychotherapy training 2 years before, and family history was a really big part of that psychotherapy training. So I didn't have anything else to do. We, of course, had CERB here in Canada. So I had a lot of money coming into the bank account because I didn't have as many clients at that point. And so I just sat down and wrote. So for 8 months, I wrote this book, really was involved in kind of worldwide traditions. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. So then last September, it came out and it's been doing really well. People have been really having a good time with it.
Yes. And I want to touch on the concept of your book. So for those who are not familiar with spiritual practices, what are they exactly, and what have you written about in your book? Maybe are there applications that people can use in their daily lives? Or let's just speak a little bit more about that, because to me it sounds a little open-ended. Yes. And not, I personally don't have a lot of expertise in spiritual practices, and I'm just wondering what exactly it is, how it's applicable to someone's circumstances, and how one could incorporate it into their lives.
Absolutely. So the target audience is really a Western audience, North American and Western European, Australian audience. And one of the issues of the Western world is we have become so psychologized when it comes to our relationship to reality around us, right? Everything is symbolic. Everything is figurative. Everything is outside. Everything is within a nice, tidy box.
Yes.
And one of the big issues that we're seeing in the therapy field, particularly as the baby boomers start to age out, and particularly around the COVID pandemic, was the sheer amount of death that was suddenly surrounding us. And that Western idea and model of connection with death and understanding death and kind of digesting death.
Yes.
I'm afraid, right? Most people in the Western world, I would say, are relatively agnostic. Even if they profess a religion, they may approach it in an agnostic sort of way. And that is not a norm when it comes to world history. When you look at the majority of human cultures, the metaphysical, the supernatural, the spiritual has been a vibrant part of worldview. And I feel the Western view, when somebody dies, oftentimes they're just relegated to some other space. They're not even considered people anymore, right?
Yes.
And yet, there is a real interest in exploring this and connecting still. This is why we have psychic fairies everywhere. This is why we have Pixar movies like Coco, which is based around the Chicano Mexican Day of the Dead.
Yes.
The idea of that relationships can survive even after death and into death is a huge part of human culture all around the world. It's really just the past 150 years, really the past 100 years, where the Western culture has shifted away from this understanding of reality that isn't confined to these five senses. So go on.
No, it's completely fine. I was just going to ask you to walk me through the process of writing your book. Did you have to do a lot of research on your own? Or obviously you've got a degree, you've done therapy before, and I'm wondering, how did you compile all this information to write your book?
This is where it becomes a strained piece, because different genres of writing require different skills and different ways of approaching. Because this book was partly a therapy book, and I like to think of it as a couples therapy between you and your ancestors, or you and these dead people, right? A lot of the modality of worldview had to have examples, tangible examples grounded in cultures around the world. And so that took research, that took sensitivity, that took understanding the worldview behind ritual. And I take people through various forms of cultural ritual and cultural belief. The other piece to that was then, how do you translate that to engaging or getting people to engage in their own way?
Yes.
By creating ritual, by forming their own practice that is going to be important for them and meaningful for them. So it took then research into kind of how to best ask the right questions. So a lot of the book is journal prompts, getting people to think and engage with their thoughts and their feelings around the material that I just presented. And so some of that research was really psychological research, figuring out best how to ask questions, but also exercises for people to go through. So some of the exercises are scrapbooky exercises. Some of the questions in it are sensory kind of activities. Take your grandmother's old handbag and sit with it. Feel the edges of it, right? What's happening? So it took 8 months. I could have probably, if I was writing it now, it would probably only take 3 months. But it took me having to sit and digest, and also digest how I was relating to some of the material. One of the examples that came up was burial practices from around the world. And this idea of keeping the dead body in the house for perhaps up to 20 years in this particular culture I was writing about, because the funeral was so expensive, it took 20 years to even build the funds to actually engage with this funeral. So this idea of sitting with a dead body in the house, first of all, sitting with my own cultural values there, my own cultural lenses, and then asking my readers, who I don't know. It's very rare that I actually meet my readers. I've sold, since at last count, I've sold over 1,000 copies of this book. And I don't, like, I most of those people I don't know. So to be able to sit in this headspace of thinking, okay, and anticipating, what are some of the questions that are going to be asked by these readers, and then elaborating on them. So that was a process. That was a whole process. And being my first book too, I was completely brand new to the publishing world. I had friends who were published. And so a big part of that process was also networking and bridging out and connecting with other authors in this field and learning from them.
Yeah.
So it was a full process.
No, it's always a process publishing a book, and then even just defining your target audience. I'm wondering how you were able to do that, because obviously you were thinking about this as you were creating your book, as you were writing the pages, as you were concocting these journal prompts. And I'm wondering, did you have ideal reader in mind, or how were you able to say, this book is for this type of person, or this book is for this audience? How were you able to find and connect with that audience?
That was an easier piece, because I already knew the community I was writing to. So the community I'm writing to is that Western neo-pagan and new age sort of audience, right? Alternative spirituality movement and whatnot. So within that, the challenge was to see what has already been written towards that community specifically and knowing what the questions and the issues in that community is. Cultural appropriation is a huge issue within that community. And so sitting and thinking about how am I going to sensitively write about these other cultures as examples of the points that I'm making, not as you need to go and follow these other cultures and appropriate from them. Learning how to get through the back door, learning to understand why cultural appropriation is such a big thing in this community and what purpose that serves for them. That took some of the psychological pieces in there too. But also looking at the literature of this particular community. And it's a large community. There is, I think, something along the lines of, in the UK, there's something along the lines of 50,000 identified pagans just in the UK alone. So it's a very large community. So understanding that and publishing, particularly with the publisher I was publishing with, also helped with that because they're geared towards that community in itself.
Yes.
So that was part of the process.
And you mentioned that you have a publisher. Can you tell me about how you were able to do that networking and find a publisher, do a lot of publicity events? Were you able to promote your book, market it, get it out there? Can you walk me through that entire aspect of the book publishing process?
Oh, totally. Yes. So I was very fortunate. I actually, my clinical supervisor at the time was published through this publisher and gave me her editor's email. So I originally sent off a proposal in 2020, and they didn't get back to me for 8 months, at which point then I reached back out again and they said, oh yes, we would love to have this. So then I started writing the book. There's really, in publishing, there's really three ways of going about it. You can self-publish. You can approach a publisher that doesn't require you to have an agent, or you find an agent and you go through that route. I was fortunate with this publisher because it didn't require an agent. I feel like now I work with two different publishers, I'm primed and in a better position to approach an agent eventually. But back then it was, you send an email and it's called an inquiry email.
Yes.
So you send an inquiry email. And you describe what the book is about, be succinct, one small paragraph, just basically blurbing what the book is all about, the project is all about. And then at that point, they will write back and say, yes, send a proposal, or no, we're not interested.
Yeah.
So they asked me to send a proposal, put the proposal together, which included questions around marketing, which included questions around networking, which included questions around what other titles are already in the field on this particular subject. Because that's one thing I think a lot of writers quite understand when they're first starting to put the book together. There's a cliche that anybody can write a book and anybody can write, but nobody can write your book, right? Which is true, but it doesn't mean that your book has to be written, because there could be many other titles in that particular subject, in which case, if there's too much competition, a publisher probably will say no, right? So at that point, because it was just during the pandemic and the whole process took about 2 years, basically, there was an interest in, okay, we need more deaf books, as horrible as that sounds, but it's true. There was going to be a big interest in that particular subject within this field and within this niche, but they said yes. And ironically, I had already sent a pitch to another publisher, the second major publisher within this niche. And they replied back and said, we're not interested right now in this, but this is really strong. Do go and take this to Llewellyn and you'll be more successful. It turns out that they had already contracted a very similar title with somebody else in that niche. So that was their way of saying, no, you've got something strong here, go somewhere else because we can't take it. So I wrote the book, submitted the manuscript. They had a look through it, various forms of edits. And during that editing period was when we started to ramp up promotion and marketing. And so I actually started a podcast and reached out to other authors to begin to network in that way. And it's easier to meet other authors, especially some of the bigger names in this niche, because I was already listed with Llewellyn and I was already an author myself, like the author, right? So I started my podcast, started putting my name out there. And then probably about 6 months before it came out, so this was about March of last year, I was assigned a publicist from the publisher. And he then hooked me up with podcasts for me to be a guest on. So in between us recording today and last year, I did about 50 podcast episodes, which is a fair number, especially I found half of them myself. Some of them were turned to me by this publicist. And because of where I live in Canada, I'm about 3 hours outside of Toronto, but it's still quite rural. It's up near one of the Great Lakes. And so there's not really a space that I can get to promote it myself. In the United States, a lot of authors travel around and have many speaking opportunities that way. And I don't have that opportunity. So my tact was to do the podcasting scene. And so that was my route. There's many different ways of doing it.
Yes. And I'm wondering if you've experimented with any other routes of marketing. I know a prominent one is ads, investing in ads or starting a YouTube channel, social media, Instagram, TikTok. I'm wondering if you've ever dabbled with those.
Totally. It's one of those things. It really depends on what the niche is, what the book is, what the topic is, and the audience, right? Ads are not going to generate anything for my particular niche. What really worked for my niche was going on to podcasts where I could speak about the topic in depth, give people a real taste, right?
Yes.
And other people was their own podcast. So the networking piece was really important because other authors will then promote you. And if they're writing in the same niche, then it becomes a mutual way of support, right? And I'm now doing that with other authors who are up and coming. So I've written forwards for some of my colleagues, writing blurbs. So endorsement blurbs is a big one too. Speaking events are really big. A lot of the people who are in, especially the spirituality kind of metaphysical niche, they want to have something that they can apply to their own practices and lives. So they want to learn. Speaking events, I've done, I think, 4 or 5 conferences now, particularly around spirituality and metaphysics. And that's been a real jive, right? When it comes to social media, it's difficult because the algorithm is against many of us.
Yes.
But certainly joining Facebook groups and advertising in those Facebook groups, forming, particularly with a podcast too, has been really useful. Forming classes and doing classes. So I, in lieu of doing in-person events because of the pandemic, I put together an 8-week course on this topic. And I made this book then in the second round of me doing it, the course book for this course. And it was a place where people could come, learn the material, have the book in hand, but also have that space that they can talk and dive in and engage with other people. So that was a big one. And certainly, I think the final piece there is really just, even if you don't have a strong social media presence, having a social media presence is really important. So revamping my website was big. Going on, changing it to not only look like it belongs to someone writing in 2023, 24, but to have that approachability. People nowadays, particularly when it comes to any kind of self-help or spirituality books, they want to know that what they're learning is coming from a real person because there are so many AI-created books out there, particularly on Amazon, right?
Yes, and it's just crazy how many there are out there these days.
It's ridiculous, right? And I've had friends who have been ripped off by these books. I also have friends who their books were copied and recreated through AI and resold on Amazon. So it becomes a really frustrating thing. But yes, you have to know your audience. You have to know what's going to work with your audience. You have to know your audience's needs and also what you're capable of doing. Sometimes, you know, people who are more introverted, particularly in spirituality writing, they tend to be a little bit more introverted. Going and doing speaking events instead of at home writing or in the coffee shop writing, it's not going to work for them. And it becomes an issue, right? There's various different ways of approaching it.
I'm just wondering if you'd suggest to step outside your comfort zone and maybe do some more of those public speaking events or even popping onto podcasts, doing that marketing aspect of the book publishing. How would you approach it, say, if you were more introverted, as a lot of people in your niche tend to be?
And this is the learning curve. I actually had this conversation with somebody a few weeks ago. And unfortunately, nowadays, particularly, and you have to know your niche, right? You really have to know the audience that you're writing for. And oftentimes, the pagan spirituality authors that I know, we've been part of the community for such a long time, right? So you have to know your niche. You have to understand what is needed. Going onto podcasts is a way of connecting and is something that a lot of people listen to because people in this niche tend to be crafters, right? A lot of them tend to be crafters, or they want to listen to something while they're doing something like knitting or doing leather work or doing whatever it is, right? And oftentimes, even if you're introverted, they'll be introverted too, right? And oftentimes what I've heard is that people really appreciate, like my podcast, for example, the guests that I've brought on, because we're more thoughtful and we tend to, it's not about the glam, we tend to go deep and people are really interested in that. It's one of those things where you just have to move out of your comfort zones. There's give and take. But I found that the more people get into talking about their expert subject, the more they brighten up and the more they get into it and the more people will listen because of that.
That's a wonderful message that I believe my audience needs to hear. Now, I just want to ask you about where people can find your book, your website. Where can people reach out to you if they want to join your course, read your book, whatever goodies you have on your website?
Of course, everything is on benstimpson.com. You can find my social media on there. You can find some freebies. I have some free classes on there, podcasts that I've done, podcasts that I've been on, and of course, more information about the books that I've got coming out. Everything, benstimpson.com.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Please do check Ben Stimpson out. Go look at the podcast description, go to his link, and thanks for supporting us. If you like this podcast episode and you want more episodes like this, then please do share it with a friend or family member. Thank you.